The main promise of quantum computing is the ability to solve problems far faster than classical computers, but exactly how much faster varies. There are two applications where quantum algorithms appear to provide an exponential speedup, says Troyer. One is factoring large numbers, which could make it possible to break the public key encryption that the internet is built on. The other is simulating quantum systems, which could have applications in chemistry and materials science. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. This show is brought to you by Swan.com, where you can buy Bitcoin and plug your entire financial life into a Bitcoin standard. And of course, CoinKite and the Cold Card hardware wallet, which is where you will put that Bitcoin so that you know you own it and your keys are secure. Check them both out in the show notes. And we have got an interesting little read today and discussion on quantum computing. I still get questions about this from time to time. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I read a piece by Jameson Lopp on kind of getting a head start and thinking about like quantum computing and because the quantum algorithms do actually appear to give an exponential increase when it comes to the public key cryptography problem, to factoring large numbers. But it is incredible how difficult it is to find accurate and structurally sound information about it, in the sense that it's actually some sort of robust data or example of something that it is doing. And I read this short little article on spectrum.ieee.org, and it's essentially a reality check on this. Now, and I don't want to diminish the fact that we should absolutely be thinking about quantum-resistant cryptography and that, you know, it should stay part of the discussion because of the nature of Bitcoin and how it works. But also, if you aren't buying Bitcoin or you're worried about it, because of quantum computing's potential to break the cryptography of Bitcoin, then I think this article ought to shine a little light on why that's a rather absurd position to be in. And it doesn't really align with anything about the reality of quantum computing. So let's just go ahead and get into the article, and then we will follow up with a guy's take. Quantum Computing's Hard Cold Reality Check, by Ed Gent. Hype is everywhere, skeptics say, and practical applications are far away. The quantum computer revolution may be further off and more limited than many have been led to believe. That's the message coming from a small but vocal set of prominent skeptics in and around the emerging quantum computing industry. Quantum computers have been touted as a solution to a wide range of problems, including financial modeling, optimizing logistics, and accelerating machine learning. Some of the more ambitious timelines proposed by quantum computing companies have suggested these machines could be impacting real-world problems in just a handful of years. But there's growing pushback against what many see as unrealistic expectations for the technology. Meta's Lacoon, not so fast, qubit. Meta's head of AI research, Yann LeCun, recently made headlines after pouring cold water on the prospect of quantum computers making a meaningful contribution in the near future. Speaking at a media event celebrating the 10-year anniversary of Meta's fundamental AI research team, he said the technology is, quote, a fascinating scientific topic, but that he was less convinced of the, quote, possibility of actually fabricating quantum computers that are actually useful. While LeCun is not an expert in quantum computing, leading figures in the field are also sounding a note of caution. Oscar Painter, head of quantum hardware for Amazon Web Services, says there is a, quote, tremendous amount of hype in the industry at the minute, and that, quote, it could be difficult to filter the optimistic from the completely unrealistic. A fundamental challenge for today's quantum computers is that they are very prone to errors. Some have suggested that these so-called noisy intermediate-scale quantum, or NISQ, processors could still be put to useful work. But Painter says there's growing recognition that this is unlikely, and quantum error correction schemes will be key to achieving practical quantum computers. The leading proposal involves spreading information over many physical qubits to create logical qubits that are more robust, but this could require as many as 1,000 physical qubits for each logical one. Some have suggested that quantum error correction could even be fundamentally impossible, though that is not a mainstream view. Either way, realizing these schemes at the scale and speeds required remains a distant goal, Painter says. Quote, given the remaining technical challenges in realizing a fault-tolerant quantum computer capable of running billions of gates over thousands of qubits, it is difficult to put a timeline on it, but I would estimate at least a decade out, he says. Microsoft, clarity, please. The problem isn't just one of timescales. In May, Matthias Troyer, a technical fellow at Microsoft who leads the company's quantum computing efforts, co-authored a paper in Communications of the ACM suggesting that the number of applications where quantum computers could provide a meaningful advantage was more limited than some might have you believe. Quote, we found out over the last 10 years that many things that people have proposed don't work, he says, and then we found some very simple reasons for that. The main promise of quantum computing is the ability to solve problems far faster than classical computers. But exactly how much faster varies. There are two applications where quantum algorithms appear to provide an exponential speedup, says Troyer. One is factoring large numbers, which could make it possible to break the public key encryption the internet is built on. The other is simulating quantum systems, which could have applications in chemistry and materials science. Quantum algorithms have been proposed for a range of other problems, including optimization, drug design, and fluid dynamics. But touted speedups don't always pan out, sometimes amounting to a quadratic gain, meaning the time it takes the quantum algorithm to solve a problem is the square root of the time taken by its classical counterpart. Troyer says these gains can quickly be wiped out by the massive computational overhead incurred by quantum computers. Operating a qubit is far more complicated than switching a transistor, and is therefore orders of magnitude slower. This means that for smaller problems, a classical computer will always be faster, and the point at which the quantum computer gains a lead depends on how quickly the complexity of the classical algorithm scales. Troyer and his colleagues compared a single NVIDIA A100 GPU against a fictional future fault-tolerant quantum computer with 10,000 logical qubits and gates, many times faster than today's devices. Troyer says they found that a quantum algorithm with a quadratic speedup would have to run for centuries, even millennia, before it could outperform a classical one on problems big enough to be useful. Another significant barrier is data bandwidth. Qubits' slow operating speeds fundamentally limit the rate at which you can get classical data in and out of a quantum computer. Even in optimistic future scenarios, this is likely to be thousands or millions of times slower than classical computers, says Troyer. That means data-intensive applications like machine learning or searching databases are almost certainly out of reach for the foreseeable future. The conclusion, says Troyer, was that quantum computers will only really shine on small data problems with exponential speedups. All the rest is beautiful theory, but will not be practical, he adds. The paper didn't make much of an impact in the quantum community, says Troyer, but many of Microsoft customers were grateful to get some clarity on realistic applications for quantum computing. He says they've seen a number of companies downsize or even shut down their quantum computing teams, particularly in the financial sector. Aronson, welcome skeptics. These limitations shouldn't really be a surprise to anyone who's been paying close attention to quantum computing research, says Scott Aronson, a professor of computer science at the University of Texas at Austin. Quote, There are these claims about how quantum computing will revolutionize machine learning and optimization in finance and all these industries, where I think skepticism was always warranted, he says. If people are just now coming around to that, well then, welcome. While he also thinks practical applications are still a long way off, recent progress in the field has actually given him cause for optimism. Earlier this month, researchers from quantum computing startup QuEra and Harvard demonstrated that they could use a 280-qubit processor to generate 48 logical qubits, far more than previous experiments have managed. This was definitely the biggest experimental advance, maybe for several years, says Aronson. Yuval Boger, chief marketing officer at QuEra, is keen to stress that the experiment was a lab demonstration, but he thinks the results have caused some to reassess their timescales for fault-tolerant quantum computing. At the same time, though, he says they have also noticed a trend of companies quietly shifting resources away from quantum computing. This has been driven in part by growing interest in AI since the advent of large language models, he says. But he agrees that some in the industry have exaggerated the near-term potential of the technology, and says the hype has been a double-edged sword. Quote, "It helps get investments and get talented people excited to get into the field," he says. "But on the other hand, when you say quantum is going to solve all the world's problems and then it doesn't, or it doesn't right now, that creates a little bit of a letdown." Even in the areas where quantum computers look most promising, the applications could be narrower than initially hoped. In recent years, papers from researchers at scientific software company Schrödinger and a multi-institutional team have suggested that only a limited number of problems in quantum chemistry are likely to benefit from quantum speedups. Merck KGaA, lovely accelerator, sometimes. It's also important to remember that many companies already have mature and productive quantum chemistry workflows that operate on classical hardware, says Philip Harbach, global head of group digital innovation at German pharma giant Merck KGaA in Darmstadt, Germany, not to be confused with the American company Merck. "In the public, the quantum computer was portrayed as if it would enable something not currently achievable, which is inaccurate," he says. "Primarily, it will accelerate existing processes rather than introducing a completely disruptive new application era. So we are evaluating a difference here." Harbach's group has been investigating the relevance of quantum computing to Merck's work for about 6 years. While NISQ devices may potentially have uses for some certain highly specialized problems, they've concluded that quantum computing will not have a significant impact on industry until fault tolerance is achieved. Even then, how transformative that impact could be really depends on the specific use case and products a company is working on, says Harbach. Quantum computers shine at providing accurate solutions to problems that become intractable at larger scales for classical computers. That could be very useful for some applications, such as designing new catalysts, says Harbach. But most of the chemistry problems Merck is interested in involve screening large numbers of candidate molecules very quickly. "Most problems in quantum chemistry do not scale exponentially, and approximations are sufficient," he says. "They are well-behaved problems. You just need to make them faster with increased system size." Nonetheless, there can still be cause for optimism, says Microsoft's Troyer. Even if quantum computers can only tackle a limited palette of problems in areas like chemistry and materials science, the impact could still be game-changing. "We talk about the Stone Age and the Bronze Age and the Iron Age and the Silicon Age, so materials have a huge impact on mankind," he says. The goal of airing some skepticism, Troyer says, is not to diminish interest in the field, but to ensure that researchers are focused on the most promising applications of quantum computing with the greatest chance of impact. This show is brought to you by CoinKite and the ColdCard hardware wallet. If you want to secure your Bitcoin, you want to keep it off of the malicious and security hole-ridden devices of your laptop, of your mobile phone, you want to separate those keys, but you still want to have access, you still want to have easy use of your Bitcoin. This is why I love the Cold Card, because it has such a range of ways that you can use it. I literally have one that I keep predominantly as just kind of like my don't ever touch it cold storage. And then I have a combo set up with a multi-sig on Nunchuck wallet, which you don't need multi-sig at all. You can just do a single sig with a tap signer or a cold card and do NFC. And whenever you want to send a transaction, you just tap it to your phone. It is such a cool setup, and I have been using it for a long time, and I love it. If you haven't explored these devices, the many devices that CoinKite has, as well as the really fun Bitcoin hardware and the block clock and the open dime, all of these things, if you haven't checked them out, you absolutely need to. Take a moment, check them out, and don't forget that you can get 9% off with code BitcoinAudible at checkout. The link and details will be right in the show notes. All right, so that wraps up the piece on the cold hard reality check for quantum computing. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack. Well, it's hard to unpack anything with the quantum computing discussion, because holy crap, the level of vagaries and hand waving that goes on around quantum computing. And necessarily, you know, part of me wants to say, okay, it's just difficult to understand, and somebody knows something that I don't, et cetera, et cetera. Like, just this idea that the reason it's so convoluted and it sounds like a whole big pile of nothing is because I am limited in my understanding. And there is always, always a degree of truth to that. But I have also found that if somebody really gets what they are talking about, if they actually understand something themselves, they can at least paint some sort of picture that will incite some understanding in another person. And I have not really found that at all in quantum computing, outside of the most broad, unspecific concept of what a quantum bit is, of this thing in superposition that is going to fall one way or another. And the idea of an algorithm that can, like, you know, factor public key cryptography or something, is what it does is it essentially, you know, puts the conclusion at the end, you know, puts the where you're starting from and then where you're trying to get to at the beginning and end of this elaborate quantum computing device. And then because everything is in superposition, is that the path of least resistance for this elaborate construction in this, you know, created in this algorithmic way, that there is this one subset of all the different combinations of things where it is the path of least resistance, where energy would flow from one direction or from the beginning to the end, let's say from an encryption key to its decrypted state. Or maybe a better example is the original data plus the signature for that data, so that you're pulling the encryption key out of it. That superposition will fall into the path of least resistance, and that will reveal the private key. I don't even remember where I heard that particular explanation, but it at least paints some sort of picture in my head as to why this would even be useful for something, because so much of the time it's just quantum, 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 and it just kind of uses the fact that quantum doesn't really mean anything to anybody. It's very much like AI, like artificial intelligence, and I've said it a couple of times on my show on AI Unchained that I don't even like the term artificial intelligence. I think it confuses way more than it actually informs, but unfortunately, there's not really anything that I can do. A show called LLM Unchained would not pull any interest, or most people would be like, what is he talking about? At some point, you have to use the words as everyone else understands them, or the words that have come to mean something in society. Like, I can't just, like, change the word and hope that everybody's going to understand me. But after going through a period of just hearing quantum this and quantum that, I was damn near certain that quantum meant absolutely nothing at all, and nobody had any idea what they were talking about. And I believe in Lop's episode, actually, I talked about a conversation I had, because I went on kind of a little tirade and back and forth with a few people on Twitter back in the day about it. I guess it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, maybe. And a whole bunch of people were telling me that, you know, I didn't have any idea what I was talking about. And, you know, you just got to look into it. There's a lot of quantum experts who would be happy to talk. And I was like, okay. I'm sure I don't know what I'm talking about because it seems ridiculous. So bring them in. And they tagged a couple of people that I did not really know. And I'll completely admit I didn't even dig much into it after this. I read through two research papers, or skimmed. I skimmed through two research papers that this guy basically said, oh, no, there's great advancements and there's all this stuff. And one of them was an article about a quantum computer that factored a number faster than a classical computer. And, you know, specifically with, I think it was Grover's algorithm, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember exactly which quote-unquote quantum algorithm it is that supposedly does the public key cryptography solution, so to speak. I think there are a couple, if I remember correctly, and one of them was tried or tested on some virtual or logical qubits. And then I've noticed that the article was about something that happened like 4 years earlier. So this was like, I think it was 2020 or 2021. And if I remember correctly, what it was talking about happened all the way back in 2016, which I thought, you know, I was explicitly being skeptical and saying, what do you have to show for this? Please tell me, give me something concrete, something that I can actually make some sort of sense out of and not just some vague hand-wavy hype bullshit. And he gives me like a 4 or 5 year old quote-unquote advancement that's supposed to be like the big thing, that's proof. And for the life of me, I start digging through. The article doesn't have a source. It links to some other thing that I think I had to hunt through like 2 or 3 different things to find the actual paper that was about this thing. And it would not, I swear, not a single article, not a single one of the authors of any of these articles knew what the hell they were talking about. They did not actually get concrete, like, statements about what it is that this thing actually did, because they couldn't explain it. There were no explicit details. Okay, what did it do? What did it factor? How long did it take? Just a bunch of vagaries, which was what I was finding all the time. And it was exhausting. It's exhausting. It takes a ton of time to try to filter through all of that crap. And it is wasteful. It is incredibly wasteful. And it drives me crazy when I can't find a clear answer about something. But I did eventually dig through and find the supposed research paper it was on. And when I found it, I think I found why it was that they were so vague and they weren't making any clear statements about what happened. Because the number that they had factored supposedly faster than a classical computer was 2 digits. And, you know, I'm even curious if it was even that it factored it faster or if it specifically factored it by Grover's algorithm, by the algorithm in question that's supposedly the one that will, you know, factor massive, 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 massive numbers. It will scale way better than, you know, classical computing. But I can't remember exactly, but for some reason, I believe it was like the number 15 or something. And honestly, that's when I was just kind of like, this is, I gotta wait for, you know, people were saying that, you know, could be 3-5 years before something huge. It's been 3-5 years now. And as this article points out, it seems like people are pulling funding away from quantum computing rather than actually appearing to get anything meaningful out of it. Now, this is not to say that there is nothing there, that quantum computing isn't a thing, and that there might actually, that there isn't any use case or there is not any potential threat to classical cryptographic, to solving classical cryptography and public key cryptography systems, or breaking them, I guess, is the better term. That's still a very real possibility. And, you know, if history is any lesson, every cryptography scheme has essentially had a shelf life. At some point, technology has advanced to the point that it breaks the old paradigm. Now, maybe there is simply, you know, as Julian Assange says, for some reason, the universe smiles on cryptography. There is this natural asymmetry. I guess really you could say it's a dichotomy and asymmetry between randomness and order, and the fact that you can never have enough order such that it makes sense or can predict and reverse all of the randomness of the universe, like that there's this natural limitation to that. It's kind of like the second law of thermodynamics, really, that entropy is always increasing, and any amount of increase in order has a requisite larger increase in the entropy of the universe. You could kind of say it's very possible that that is there somewhere in that is this reality that you can grab total randomness at a certain scale such that the entire energy of the universe could not unravel or could not predict what that randomness is. And, you know, this is very much in line with some of the logical reasons why people think artificial intelligence is going to take over the world, artificial general intelligence, and there's going to be this super intelligent being that can know where everybody is and how everybody's going to decide how to do anything and everything and manipulate everybody and just fine-tune, like comb through the entirety of existence and just know and plan everything. When that, it's a complete misunderstanding of the intelligence versus the computational problem. That is not an issue of intelligence. It's not a matter of like how intelligent is the AGI such that it can control everything and know everything and predict where everything is going to be and just know the future. Because that's not an intelligence problem. That's a problem of computation. That's like saying that if I just was smart enough, I could know exactly how every molecule in the air in this room is going to interact with every single other molecule, and then I can just know that in 10 minutes, I can know the exact location of every single molecule in the air in this room. That's not an intelligence problem. And no amount of, like, guys super, super smart is going to solve that problem. In fact, it's a computational problem that's so unbelievably vast that there's no feasible way that I could ever entertain all of the potential possibilities. And not because I'm not smart enough, not because I don't have a big enough computer, but because of the sheer amount of energy necessary to just play it out. Everything that happens in the realm of intelligence and the realm of thinking is a map. It's a virtual representation of something that's drastically simpler than the way the thing actually is. It's like saying it can never, ever be as complex as in-depth, because if it was as complex and as in-depth as the actual thing, then it would just be the thing. It's the very same reason that a map of a forest is not in any way all of the insane complexity of the leaves and the limbs and the bugs and the mud and everything in this vast array, hugely complex and interactive environment. The map will never, ever be able to portray that information. In that same way, that is all a long rant to suggest that it's possible that at some point encryption reaches a point where it doesn't get broken, where the math is sound enough that the energy cost of even attempting to break it is simply infeasible. If this asymmetry genuinely exists at all levels of the universe, the question is, if you go small enough, if you go into the quantum realm and string theory, do the laws work out that same way? Or is it only at layers above? Is it only in the physical layer and the layer of matter and gravity and space-time? And if we can utilize the reality of that next level down set of laws that are different, mostly because they are the building blocks of the laws that we know, does that then fundamentally change the dynamic? Now, just in a general sense, not going all science fictiony on us, it seems pretty clear that obviously, I mean, one thing I will not deny, quantum computers are a thing. Qubits have some sort of computational benefit or application. Whether that means it is a significant or genuine and realistic risk to our cryptography systems is really hard to say, honestly. But it does certainly seem like the possibility should be considered and it should exist. Because of the math suggests that there is something real there. And very often we seem to find out that if the math checks out, the universe usually aligns with it at some level. But I specifically wanted to read this article because I still from time to time get somebody saying, oh, what will happen if when quantum computers break the cryptography? And, you know, I'm scared to invest in all of this, which really seems very much in the same line of thinking of if an asteroid hit and knocked out all the internet, then we wouldn't be able to use Bitcoin. It's like, we wouldn't be able to use anything. Like, the dollar wouldn't work. What would be, who would have dollars that they don't have on a credit card or a debit card? And, you know, in both examples that I think are both ridiculous, largely, but I still think there's a grain of truth in that we need to be thinking about quantum-resistant cryptography because a transition to a different algorithm would be an insanely difficult thing to do. It would be the most complicated, I guess not necessarily complicated, but messy in the sense of like the consensus that has to be done and all of the reworking that has to be done around signatures and all of the different pieces of the Bitcoin system. And then the hard fork that would have to be implemented in order to do so, that I think it's worthy of the discussion and that there should be time and energy devoted to it. But I think Adam Back even said this, is that if that turns out to be a threat or when that starts to become a threat, it will be really obvious way ahead of time. And right now, I still have not seen anything better. That doesn't mean it's not out there, but I have yet to see anything better than the factoring of a double-digit number, which is a very, 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 very far cry from the factoring of a 256-bit number. And in addition, the only addresses that would be explicitly, or the transactions and the balances, the UTXOs that would be explicitly at risk would be the pay-to-public key addresses that were dominant back in like 2009, 2010 era, basically Satoshi's coins, and which is, you know, there's a huge portion of coins on the network that would actually be exposed to this, but mostly it's just because they're stuck. But the reason is because their public keys are actually exposed, which means that you have all the time in the world to try to reverse those public keys and get the private keys from them. However, what we do now with Bitcoin, which I think it started in 2011, 2012 era somewhere, is the dominant form of transaction is the pay to public key hash. So it's just a hash of the public key. So the public key is not exposed until you sign and broadcast. But the private key is individual for for every single UTXO. That reality is just obscured away by the seed phrase. You have a master private key that creates a bunch of sub private keys for every single UTXO, and then you sign those, which means that the area of attack, the zone of attack with pay to script public key hash or pay to script hash transactions would be between when you broadcasted the transaction and when it was confirmed into a block. So you wouldn't merely need a quantum computer that could factor, you know, through public key cryptography from a public key to a private key in a time that is relevant to a human lifespan that could make it significant. You would need to do it in a matter of a few minutes. Because as soon as it gets confirmed and it's in a new UTXO, which is a new, you know, paid hash, whatever, the hash can't be reversed. It's a different type of thing. And each UTXO has a new private key. So it's specifically that UTXO that would be a threat. And when you spin from a UTXO, your change goes to a new UTXO. You spend the whole thing. It's like a bill. It's like if you get sent 100,000 sats in a single UTXO, you can't spend 10,000 of it. What you do is you send 10,000 to one place, and then you spend 90,000 back to you. It's like a full bill. You can't just like leave some of it where it was. It just goes to a new address that you control with a new private key, also derived from your master seed. So you would need a quantum computer that's not just massive enough to reverse public key cryptography, but also massive enough that it can do so in a matter of moments, like at seconds, minutes, tops, such that you could rebroadcast that transaction before it got confirmed, after you have now cracked it because you saw it publicly, so that you could spend the coins to somewhere else. Obviously, your own address that would be, I guess, quantum cryptography resistant, as the prime example. But it just seems, especially with the way things have gone, it's been like 5 or 6 years that I've heard that this is like, we should be worried about this, you know, when 2020 has come around and it's 2024. But it seems very, very unlikely that something like that is just going to sneak up on us. I'll tell you where I would get interested and or worried or think that it's time to kind of accelerate that. First, it would be in the fact that they can factor a large number that is very significant, you know, like a 9-digit number, you know, millions or, you know, billions, very quickly and very efficiently with a quantum computer. And specifically with, you know, Grover's algorithm or whatever, that's when it would start getting interesting. That like, okay, so it's clearly coming up with, it's seeing like a Moore's law or something comparable in its continued efficacy and power. And I had seen things that said that this is the case, and, you know, Google has 1,000 qubits and these people have 2,000 qubits, et cetera, et cetera. But it increasingly seems like the error correction problem scales the wrong way with the scaling up of the qubits. And that even though they have quantum computers of this size that could start to get really, that could potentially be really dangerous, that the total lack of consistency in the output, the amount of errors and problems in trying to scale it larger and scaling more complexity into it, basically has a negative feedback where it can only potentially get so large. And then the other big thing that I think would be interesting or would make me look at this again and, you know, maybe want to talk to somebody about it on the show or something, would be a massive development in the materials space. Is that I think one of the big problems is that we do not have, is that the materials and the way quantum computers are built, there's no way, at least in my mind, from a very limited understanding of how these things are constructed, is that this is how, if quantum computers are ever built to the scale that they're actually useful and they're used in a bunch of these different applications for a bunch of different purposes, they will not be constructed out of the same materials or in the same way as they are now. And I have heard some kind of like hand-wavy claims that, oh, graphene is going to change everything, but I've been hearing about graphene for a long time, which is an amazing thing. Graphene has tons of different use cases and potential for so, so many different things and in so many different ways, except that I have yet to see anybody who can actually, at scale, manufacture the stuff in a consistent and high quality way. And until you can do that, you're not going to get any of those fancy applications out of it. You need real world advancement in how to just make graphene the way that we say it would be if we could use it for all of these other things. And that's why I think it will likely be in the materials science that we should be looking out for computer advancements in computing that would lead to better qubit construction, so to speak. But it just seems to me like there's not much there right now. So, I guess that's all. It's just a cool article. Don't remember who sent it to me, but it somehow got on my list, and I was reading through it today. I was like, this should be a good one to revisit, especially since there seems to be some sort of new meaningful development, of which is really that it is losing funding. And I think that should be an indication of where things actually were, you know, 3 to 4 years ago when this all seemed imminent. So thank you guys for listening so much. This is Bitcoin Audible. Do not forget to subscribe and check out my other show, AI Unchained, and the YouTube channel. We have tons of great stuff over there. I just dropped my latest guy's quick take or short take, whatever you want to call it. The whole narrative about the debt doesn't matter. So if you haven't checked that one out, definitely do. I'll have the link for it in the show notes, actually, at the YouTube channel. And we have another series coming, Devs Who Can't Code for AI Unchained. And I think this is going to be such a big multiplier for the real productivity and real value of AI and where it can be used. And I highly encourage anybody who is technically literate and has always thought, man, if only I could build this app to make it work for me, that reality might be here. And that's what we're exploring with that series. And I started out with just a chat episode with Hope on a million new devs. So don't forget to check that out. A huge thank you to Swan and CoinKite for supporting this show. The links to those with their discount codes, and then links to the YouTube channel and the Devs Who Can't Code series, is all right there in the show notes. And until then, I am Guy Swan, and I will catch you on the next one. Take it easy, guys. There is only one kind of shock worse than the totally unexpected. The expected for which one has refused to prepare. Mary Renault.